as I wait, heart of God.
Hello, New Life, and welcome to the Growth Group podcast, where we believe that spiritual growth happens better in circles than it does in rows. My name is David Haken, and I'm joined by Jonathan Markham, the pastor of New Life Christian Fellowship here in Pacifica, California, and we record these podcasts to help you go deeper with Sunday's teaching, both in your small group and in your individual walk with the Lord. This week, we are returning to our kind of fun periodic series. Are we calling it the Roundtable series, the Interview series? We've done a series of these before, and they've always been so much fun.
Yes, this one is the sort of, in a sense, there's two ways in which we've done this. First of all, they've been, you know, pure testimonies where it's just basically somebody telling the story of their lives and how God has intervened, but
not necessarily thematic in any way.
Right, but then there's some others that we're doing. We've done one so far, which really looks at the way people are actually living as Christians, and the way in which being a follower of Jesus affects either the job they do or some activity in their lives, which is fairly specific, which is why today we talked to Andy and Mary, not about their jobs, but about their public service, both of them being elected officials, and obviously having had to look at somebody or suggested that they stand for election to an office. They decided to do that and were elected, and therefore notice all the challenges that are faced by somebody who is in public office. And what difference does it make? How does walking with Jesus make a difference to that?
Well, I think some of those challenges and some of the opportunities as well for someone working in public service will come out in these questions.
So I think so. It's an extension, because really, when you look at the word public service, it has to relate to government in some way or another.
Right, or the ordering of society.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, both of the people we talked to were people who had voluntarily stood for election. There is obviously another aspect of public service which is related but not the same, where people actually work in government institutions.
Yeah, right. The DMV and much less fallen institutions,
yes,
as well. All right, our first question. Yes. Created to work, that is before the fall. When God placed Adam and Eve in the garden, he had a purpose. What was that purpose? If man was created to rule the world by spreading the garden to the farthest reaches of the planet, how does this influence the way you see your 9-to-5?
I mean, a great question, because, I mean, so many of us, I think, at least it was certainly true of me in an earlier part of my life, we actually see, you know, our work lives, those things that we do, or everything other than sort of what we do on Sunday and if we go to any meetings during the week, as peripheral to our walk with Jesus.
Kind of the sacred-secular divide.
Right. And, you know, even if we don't think we have a sacred-secular divide, I think we don't think we do. I think that it warrants a consideration to think exactly what makes out the way we approach something different.
I think one of the speakers at the Exponential Conference that we went to a month ago addressed this in a really good way when he talked about the veil being torn and now there is a universal priesthood of all believers,
right,
such that there isn't this division between Levite and general Israelite, and how we can see that today as everyone is called to minister and to have a role in
right.
the church.
And recently I've been reading a book called The Pursuit of God by A.W. Tozer, and he has a whole chapter on this.
Interesting.
A chapter on rending of the veil actually meant.
Huh, cool. Yeah, that's very interesting. You'll have to preach about that sometime. Well, shall we move on to our second question?
Yes.
This one kind of, it kind of progresses chronologically through the Bible, starting with our first question about creation and now kind of looking a little bit more at fall. Right in their own eyes is what this question is called. Oftentimes, the moral examples in the Bible presents us with are more negative than positive. How does the book of Judges, diagnose the moral problem of Israel's first 200 years as a nation? Part of the dilemma, it seems, was that Israel had a leadership problem. How can a society fall apart under either an absence of leadership or a corrupt leadership, either in government or in the marketplace?
Well, I think that it's interesting. You know, we've just done a series on Deuteronomy, God makes it absolutely clear that the leadership of a nation, at all levels, was intended to reflect His will.
Yeah,
was leadership under God.
I was definitely thinking about that when I was writing these questions.
That's what Deuteronomy said, and he said multiple times that if your leadership is not reflecting God, what God wants, and you're not abiding by the principles that He gave that make society work, you will be in trouble. And there's no greater example of the truth of that than the book of Judges, because the book of Judges says that uses one of those phrases that you put there. People did what was right in their own eyes.
In those days, the people had no king, and
eyes. And so, I mean, logically, I mean, people, you know, logically, if you do what's right in your eyes and I do what's right in my eyes,
our eyes aren't the same.
Our eyes are not the same. And our objective is not the same.
Often my objective is me and me only.
Right, and so is mine.
Yeah.
And so if you're doing me and me only, you know, you and you only is not wanting the same things as me and me only.
That's a divisive world, ripe for conflict. Yeah.
And the book of Judges, over and over again, the people get themselves into a terrible mess because they're doing what is right in their own eyes.
Yeah, and it seems like it's setting us up for the Davidic covenant.
You know,
Judges goes into Ruth. Ruth pictures Boaz, the great-great-grandfather of David. And then they get 1 Samuel with the people choosing their own king in Saul and then God giving him their king, his choice in David. Our third question is called In the Meantime. So kind of this place where we find ourselves between the comings of Christ. Unfortunately, due to the fallen state of man's heart, before Jesus returns, this world will always suffer under corrupt leadership. And yet, leadership itself isn't the problem. How does Romans 13 demonstrate God's use of even corrupt government? That being said, how do Joseph, Daniel, and Mordecai exemplify the potential for believers to bring blessing to the world even through the most corrupt political structure?
Well, it's fascinating to think about that, because one of the things that we have to recognize is that God is working His purpose out. God is working His plan out, regardless of the way our leaders behave. That things appear to be in chaos, and in the most direct sense they are. But God, I mean, in Romans, God, the famous verse that they've got, all things work together to good, and that means that God has decided what His purpose is going to be, and He will bring that to bear. And it's also in the it's in also we as individuals, Daniel shows us that we have the potential, we are able to resist the me and me only, the power
and
struggles.
And to do people. It through the political structures
absolutely.
Of a potentially corrupt government. Think about Joseph during Pharaoh and in Egypt.
Right.
And then later Daniel in the Babylonian and Persian empires, the same ones that destroyed Jerusalem and dragged them all off into exile, and then of course later Mordecai, and you know a couple generations after that still
and,
under
but
Persian
then you
control.
Also see
yeah.
you also see
these aren't noble societies.
You also then see people like William Wilberforce
yeah.
and all sorts of people like that who some of whom ended up being martyred because they refused to kowtow to the me and me only society. Hmm. But also you have examples of people who like Daniel, who made a real difference because he didn't. So,
yeah.
you know, the consequences of not giving in to giving in to the government of their time. It's interesting, I was reading this morning about the man who was born blind, and Jesus
John
came
9,
along,
yeah.
Jesus came along and healed the man who was born blind. And so they ask him, who healed you? And he doesn't, he expresses some, he said, this guy, you know. And they ask him again, and he sort of says, well, you know, you're criticizing him, but all I can say is I was blind, now I can see.
Right.
Do you want to follow? Do you want to follow him? But then you get somebody like his parents, who, when they were questioned, they got scared,
yeah.
and they said, "Go and ask him," because rather than say
he's of age,
ask him. Now, you know, they were scared about being kicked out of the synagogue. Obviously, the man who was born blind came to see.
Which
he
is
didn't
almost
care.
Like a governmental societal structure.
It was there,
synagogues,
yeah.
They ran so much of
and,
commerce.
You know, I read somewhere that if you got kicked out of the synagogue, you basically became a non-person in the
yeah.
Jewish community. You were done.
Real threat.
It was a very real threat. But he was prepared to say, well, you know, I was blind, now I can see. You know, if you don't want to keep me in the synagogue, well, that's your problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, that was a really great response. Our last question, fittingly, our last question is entitled Happily Ever After. When God created space, time, and matter, did he make a mistake? Put differently, has God given up on his original intentions for man in the garden to rule his creation in wisdom and justice? In light of the last chapter of man's story, in Revelation, how would the Apostle John respond to that question? How has Jesus called you to live in light of eternity today?
Hmm.
This question gets at a number of verses in Revelation that talk about believers ruling the coming new creation. There at the bottom. you want to read one of those, Jonathan, for our listening audience?
Then Revelation 20, verse 4, then I saw thrones, and seated on them were those to whom the authority to judge was committed. Also I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded for the testimony of Jesus and for the word of God, and those who had not worshipped the beast or its image and had not received its mark on their foreheads and their hands. They came to life and reigned with Christ.
Excuse us, guys. Someone just knocked on the door. I can finish reading that verse for you as I flip open to Revelation 20 in my Bible. The key section out of that particular verse Jonathan was reading that I want to draw your attention to is Revelation 20, verse 4, where it says that they came to life and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. Speaking about believers ruling and reigning over God's good creation. If that's the way that God started this whole story, where in Genesis chapter 1, he uses that same verb to rule in Genesis chapter 1, where he says that God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply. We know that, but we know that part. Fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish in the sea and over all things. So God created man to rule over this world, to exercise good and godly lordship. And so he will return to that original plan in the book of Revelation.
And this is one of, this is, you love this stuff.
This is my thing, to this be is, honest. Yes, it is.
This is your, and I mean, when I saw this question, I thought, yes, this is David's.
I mean, I'm giving you a full biblical theology of work in the Bible, starting with creation, fall, redemption, and now
and,
new creation.
And it's so important to understand that God actually, that God intends us to work.
Yeah, I mean, and it's pre-fall existence.
Yes, and it's really helpful to actually think, you know, there are those people who say, what's going to happen when we're in heaven? Are we just going to sit around on clouds?
Strum harps.
Well, clearly no. Clearly we're going to, God is going to have productive things for us to do.
Right. I mean, some of the most fulfilling things that I think we do is when we are exercising our ability, our talents, towards something that's productive and helpful for other people. Don't you find that to be the case, where you feel most alive when you're used to your fullest potential? Imagine that stripped of all vestiges of the fall.
Yeah.
That's a picture of heaven, really.
That's great.
All right, well, we're returning to our series on the disciples next week. We have two more disciples we're going to look at, Peter and John.
And yes, and next week we're going to look at Peter.
Oh, too much fun. All right, well, we'll see you there.
As I wait, heart of God, satisfy and sustain.